Hey, hey, welcome back to Down and 30. I'm your host, Elizabeth. Thank you so much for listening tonight. If you have made it this far, you have made it to the final installment, the piece de resistance of the Spooky Season series. Tonight, I have some very, very, very special guests. We are going to be covering a topic, one of the most prolific serial killers, and we actually have a bit of a family tie to this case. So I have three of my cousins joining us. I have my cousin Bridget, my cousin Carrie, and our cousin Molly, hopefully, is going to be chiming in with us after she's done with a little business venture. We love an entrepreneur. So we're going to check in with them in a couple of minutes, and I will introduce you to the case. Okay, people, we are live and in studio with Carrie and Bridget. Girls, what's going on? What's popping?
Nothing. This is really exciting.
Yeah, first pod for the both of us, I think.
First time it in the is, studio. Yeah. First step.
Yeah, and it's a good one. You invited us on for a really good one. I would say it's probably one of our favorite topics.
It's the most important episode I've done so far.
It's really true.
It's a little bit of family, a little bit of fun. And, yeah, just strap in for this one. All right, so for tonight, for the final, I think it's the final installment of the good old spooky series we've got going on here on the Down and 30 podcast. We are going to dive into the life and times and crimes of none other than Uncle Ted. Uncle Ted is our pet name for our favorite but also most hated serial killer. We're going to go into some detail about the crimes here, but once you figure out who Uncle Ted is, a lot of you, if you're into true crime at all, probably know a lot about the cases. So I won't do like my usual bore and gore scenario, because I want to do a little breakdown of how he became our uncle and all that good stuff at the end. But we definitely will go through the crimes and cases. So I'm gonna detail the story. The cousins are gonna chime in. We're hopefully gonna be joined by our cousin Molly, and we're gonna tell you all about a good old all American Ted Bundy. Right? Am I right?
Right.
Not wrong.
I'm not wrong.
Not wrong at all.
Might not be right, but I'm not wrong.
I also wonder if people maybe were first introduced to Ted through the Zac Efron series. I hope not, because we all know how inaccurate it was.
Right. But that was very popular, yeah.
Right. I think a lot of people were introduced to Uncle Ted through the looks and blue eyes of Zefron, which I think was good, because as we know, Ted was a handsome guy, so
super charming.
Not that much though.
Yeah, I don't know, he kind of was.
Do you think the Zac Efron movie, do you think that romanticized Ted Bundy?
For sure
I agree.
Yeah, and it was just wildly inaccurate. I mean, from start to finish, the timeline was so wrong. And whoever, I forget her name in real life, but Lily Collins played. Yeah, well, I know the actress.
Oh, his girlfriend, Elizabeth. Liz.
Right. Yeah, played, I felt like they really did her an injustice, because we know in real life, well, we'll get into it, but we know she did her part in real life and kind of wasn't taken seriously.
Right.
And in the Zefron depiction, I think they kind of didn't really give her due credit. So
right, like they kind of just looked like she took that L.
You go off. Yeah.
No, I agree. So that if you haven't checked that out yet, check that out. What was that called? Like something horrifying, and I'm gonna misquote it.
Hot Bundy.
Yeah,
Hot Bundy.
Hot Tin Bundy. No, it was some quote or something. I don't know. I'll mention it in the comment box. If you haven't checked it out, check it out. And then there's of course the Bundy tapes, which is still available on Netflix. That shit sent me for a loop and a half. That shit was raw uncut footage of Teddy Baby. Kurt, do we
that
have something?
Was incredible.
The Zefron one is called Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil, and Vile.
Yep.
What a mouthful.
And yep. Also Hot was like the sentence.
Yeah, also hot. Yeah. Also hot.
Bundy was not hot.
No, we are, this is not.
It was really disgusting.
We are not going to romanticize Uncle Ted in any way. Also, like, by calling him Uncle Ted, like, none of this is meant to make fun of the crimes or the victims. Like, straight up just making fun of Ted because he's a clown and the family ties later on. Again, none of it is funny. His crimes are not funny. It's just, like, the whole bizarre start to finish situation. Like, it's just, it's almost unbelievable. Like, I mean, to be honest, like, my biggest flex is, my biggest flex is that my mom, like, remembers living across the street from Ted Bundy, and I just think that that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's, like, one of those names, like, I heard my whole life, and, like, I know, like, some people I know, like, they thought, like, oh, I thought it was related to Bruce Springsteen, because, like, you know, I, like, grew up with Bruce Springsteen mm-hmm. in my life, like, I thought... Ted was literally an uncle of ours.
I was also like, I was shocked when I realized, like, wait, you all know about Ted Bundy too? Like, I thought he was our serial killer
because they lived next to him. Yeah.
I thought he was ours.
I thought he was a scary relative.
For sure. No, yeah. For sure. I wasn't expecting that at all.
No, and Beth, like you said, like, it's your biggest flex, and for sure. Any college classroom icebreaker that I'm a part of, that's my icebreaker. Mm-hmm. Oh, like, our family knows Ted Bundy. Like, I really, you know, I'm getting, every time I kind of, like, exaggerate a little bit more, but, you know, for sure, have to bring up Ted during the icebreaker because people love it. It's a fun fact to know.
And far be it from me to claim that he's not my birth father. I mean, I was born in 1990. The man was executed in 89. Like, that's a conspiracy theory. Come on. I'm actually interested in that.
I was just going to say, it's a conspiracy theory I'm actually interested in.
All right. So now you know a little bit about how Uncle Ted became Uncle Ted. Now, let's just, before we start to get too chummy under the Christmas tree or anything like that, let's just rip him to filth. Because he really was filthy. He really was. What was disgusting. It? Excruciatingly evil and vile or something? Very that. Very that.
Shitty and sharpie.
And sexy. So, all right, that being said, like, family dynamics aside, let's dive into it because there's a lot to unpack here. We'll go through the timeline. We're going to work a little backwards here. So, and I just feel like that makes the most sense for what we're setting out to do here tonight. Again, we do want to highlight the times and crimes, but we really want to drive it home with a few home videos. So, you know, if you're not familiar, long story short, Ted Bundy is one of the most infamous serial killers, probably in the world, but that's, like, so, like, American of me to be like, yeah, everyone knows. I'm like, but I don't know. Uh-huh. I mean, was anyone else doing this shit, or was it just the U.S. in the 70s that was, like, hot on the killing? I don't know.
The U.S. 70s is really something else.
Right?
It is so scary. I mean, you look at the Golden State Killer, you look at the Highway Killer,
Charles Manson.
From coast to coast. Mm-hmm. It was just like, what was happening?
Oh, and was Ted is drugs? Coast to was coast. Ted ping-ponged. Coast. Ted ping-ponged.
Ping-ponged.
I mean, Ted hit the West Coast, Ted hit the Midwest, Ted hit the Panhandle, Ted hit the East Coast, Phil, like, Ted did the damn thing. And to be honest, in the Bundy tapes with all the confessions, there's probably so much more to it, and probably so many more crimes that, like, weren't ever admitted to and all that grand stuff.
Oh, for sure.
For sure. And bodies that will never be recovered. But,
it's horrible.
But, you know, in terms of what he's admitted to or that have been, like, officially tied to him, it's at least 30 women and young girls. How effed.
So horrible.
And this, I mean, this spanned across years. He was real hot in the 70s. So like I said, let's start backwards a little bit. And then we'll just, you know, we'll kind of add in where it's appropriate to, you know, to just sort of go down the rabbit hole. Right. All right, so let's hit it off. 1974. This is the first known attack that Ted admitted to. And this is when he sort of started out that we know of with his whole shtick, breaking into homes, the whole breaking and entering thing, sexual assault, beating, the whole shebang. So actually one of his first known cases, his victim actually survived. I think that she's still alive today. I might be misspeaking, but I think that she's still alive today. But she had such severe brain damage that she actually doesn't remember the attack at all. And like 1974 is a long time ago, but like it's not, you know, it's not insane right. that she would remember that.
Mm-hmm.
So that effed me up. All right, so you know the beating. I don't even think he meant to leave this victim alive, but mm-hmm. fortunately, she lived. And unfortunately, she suffered some pretty devastating damage. But that was 1974, and then he took off running. And this whole spree of break-ins, young girls, women disappearing. They're usually like at this time between like 18 to 26 or so. That was like that was his group initially. So the one story that's like the most known about his alleged first confessed murder with all the details is Linda Ann Healy. So this is effed. He broke into her apartment, beat her, sexually assaulted her, took her from her home, but not before undressing her out of her bloody nightgown. We think dressing her in something else because there was clothes missing. Hanging up the bloody nightgown in the closet, making her bloody bed, and then taking her and ultimately murdering her because she was never seen alive ever again.
What a sick individual.
The hanging of the nightgown, like, and it was, like, so F. So this one, like, her friends, her roommates noticed right away because in the morning, like, her work called. She was, like, a ski lift. No, she worked for a radio or something. And she didn't show up for work. So, like, by 6 a.m., her work is calling her roommates, and her roommates are like, what the hell, where's Linda?
Mm-hmm.
And so all this ensues, and they're, you know, calling around to friends and this and that, and they look in her room, and it looks untouched, and they're like, where the hell is she? And then, you know, her family finally comes over in the evening and they call the cops right away. And it's the police who discover the bloody nightgown and the blood-soaked pillow and bed sheets. And they realize, okay, she's not missing. She's clearly something has went down.
Right.
So that was the first time that the alarm bells went off that something was happening in Washington at this point. And then lo and behold, week after week, like, multiple girls just going missing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them were later discovered to sort of suffer the same fate as Linda. Some of the bodies were either never found, but he admitted to them. Some of the bodies were found but not identified. And then some of the remains of the victims were later discovered and identified. But some of the notable ones, and I don't mean notable because, like, they're more important, but just, like, certain details stuck out to me in my memory and in my research and reading. So just some of the little details, some of the victims that happened at this time were Donna Manson and Susan Rancourt. And this one was interesting, Susan Rancourt, because they later found out that the same night that Susan was abducted and killed, that he actually tried to abduct another student in the parking lot using the same ruse. His thing was to pretend to be, like, an injured student And at this time, he would, like, right. have this, like, fake little arm sling, and, like, he would just, like, hobble along with, like, the pile of books in his hand, and he'd be like, oh, can you help me carry these to my car? And, this one girl...
Which...
Go for it.
Oh, yeah, sorry, go ahead. No, I was gonna say, which, like, our moms, if we can, like, you know, oscillate back and forth between East and West Coast, right? Our moms even remember him having the broken leg
summer. The crutches.
The cast. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the crutches, mm-hmm. which was all a ruse.
This was his thing. That was his, like, little shtick. Like, and it was, like so. I think a lot of that, like, you'll, like, they dive into a lot of, like, the personality disorder and the whole nine yards. And he basically admitted that, like, he was incapable of forming and maintaining social and romantic connections. So it was like this whole, like, I don't think he knew. It wasn't just the charming thing. Like, it used to be believed that, like, he, you know, lured all these women in by charm alone. No, he was not some suave, but no, like, he was pretending to be, like, some Limp Bizkit and would persuade these women into helping him, and they right. would nicely do it for a fellow student who was injured, and that's when mm-hmm. he would take a crowbar, hit him over the right. head, and the rest is history. But
it's so horrible.
Yeah, we know about the crowbar scenario. Some of that he admitted to, some of that was from the witnesses, and right. the girl that he tried to abduct, but she refused. She said that the passenger seat of his VW Beetle was missing.
No.
Yeah, what is that? Ain't
what? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wait, I do not remember that. That is gross. Mm-hmm.
That's in the book that I was reading, The Bundy Murders, A Comprehensive History. Good book. I'll share it around.
Good
so.
Book.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Good book. You know.
Please pass that around.
Good timeline. Lots of details.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah, because the timeline really is hard to nail down. I mean, even after watching the Bundy tapes, which I feel like that was, like, one of the best depictions of it, because they really, like, they drew the map. My boyfriend journalist was on it. But, like, even after that, I was like, I can't keep track of what's going on.
When you dive into it later, that's why it's, like, it's a little rough. But when you dive into it later, you figure out why the timeline that seems so insane, why it actually works. There's so many things that factored into play of why he was in certain areas at certain times. And none of it's good. So speaking of different areas, he does the Washington bit. He does the damn thing. And then... I think it was after he tried to abduct the woman and she got away that he decided to skip town and he headed down Oregon State. Yeah. Sorry, I can't read my own notes. He basically does the same thing. He's doing the arm cast. He's doing the hobbling on the streets. And again, he's targeting women. So one of the interesting cases was Georgianne Hawkins. And she was last seen leaving her boyfriend's apartment. And when she left his apartment, I think it was like his roommate heard the door shut. So he like peeked out the window to see who was leaving. And it was Georgianne. And the two of them shared a Spanish class together and they had a test in the morning. So they like chatted out through the open window for a little while. And apparently they said, not they, he said that they heard someone laughing, the boyfriend's roommate.
Oh, okay.
Heard someone laughing manically in the distance, and this is after midnight, so the roommate, it's believed that the laughter was from Ted Bundy watching them have this conversation, because it was only minutes later, and like this girl's apartment from her boyfriend was like not far, so it was only like within minutes of leaving there that she was abducted, taken, eventually killed, and never seen alive again. So, like,
I mean,
he was like, watching.
I don't mean to laugh, but the manic laughter mm-mm. is mm-mm. so effed up. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. It's honestly, like, with him, it is the little details that are, like, the scariest. Because, mm-hmm. like the hanging of the nightgown.
And the dirty the fake laughter. Cast. Like, you're right, sitting there like, cackling in an alleyway.
With a fake cast on.
On a college campus.
And he really fooled so many people into thinking he was like this smart, well-to-do man.
Meanwhile, he was just Socio Express. So we do that. We do the whole thing. And by this point in time, people in Washington and Oregon, they're freaked the F out. There's something going on. These girls are going missing. They're literally just vanishing into the night. Like, there's no remains. There's nothing. Like, some of them were just, like, they never picked up their laundry from, you know, the dorm room laundry room. And it's like, where the hell is this person? So just little things like that. These people, like, you're at the library 1 minute, and then next minute, like, no one's ever seen or heard from you again. And right. These are some of the cases that, like, he had to admit to later on because, like, again, there was no evidence. It was just pop them in the car and do his thing. Speaking of do his thing, we've got to unpack this sooner rather than later because I feel like I can't let you guys go on listening without adding in some of this. So, it, you know, the crimes included breaking in, abducting, physically assaulting, sexually assaulting, obviously murder, but there was a big, fat, giant, nasty component of necrophilia. He was into it. It wasn't just the sexual assault. It wasn't just the rape. Like, we're doing the corpse bit here too. And that is one thing that just unsettles me to my core. I just want to put this taste in everyone's mouth. Yeah. So when we talk about it, I want everyone to know, like, oh my God, okay. So, like, the necrophilia, okay. Nothing right. explains necrophilia. Please, God, wait, nothing wait, explains
no,
necrophilia.
Nothing, no. No.
Like, a kink is a kink, but
we're
sane, no.
So we're trying to find reason, but there is no reason. It's
no.
beyond the realm of comprehension.
Full-blown dysturbia. So they're freaked out. Yeah. They're getting freaked. And he's getting super confident because he's getting away with all this shit. He's riding a high. So he does the damn thing and he starts to get brave. He starts to get bold and he really hits a pinnacle. The summer of 1974, July 14th, to be specific, he reaches his new and unseen heights when he abducts two girls from the same place in one day. So he hits up this lake. I'm going to butcher the name. Lake Sammamish. Correct me in the comment section. I don't know. I'm just reading here. Literally thousands of people there that day. Like, thousands. And, like, there's multiple witnesses to these crimes and, like, you know, interactions with him that day. One of the first girls that he took that day or tried to confront and was unfortunately successful was this girl Janice Ott. And she was laying on the beach, just, like, doing her thing, enjoying the lake. She rode her bike down there and, you know, had a day of it. He approached her, and this is where it just gets bizarro. He literally introduced himself, like, hi, I'm Ted.
Right.
We're not
the
even...
The audacity.
Like, we're not trying? Like, you went through the motions of getting a fake cast and taking the passenger seat out of your car, but you're going by your first name. Okay.
Right.
So I don't know if it's bold or stupid, but
right, it's so true.
So again, multiple witnesses, keep that in mind. He's shaking the
cocky.
Good hand, right? Kind
like,
of.
Yeah, it's just cocky. Like, he's so confident in his own intelligence.
Sometimes I think he's not though.
You like, don't you think he's confident, or you don't think he's smart?
Both.
I don't know why, like, he's so simple-minded that he's just like, I'm Ted.
Right, like, I kind of thought that. Like, not even Theodore. He had a whole middle name. You couldn't go by Rob or Bob? Like,
yeah.
You know?
So simple-minded.
Like, that struck me. That was ripe. So, he wasn't just Ted to her. Like, he was shaking the good hand and introducing himself all over the lake that day. Like, he was waiting outside the concession stand, outside of the bathroom. And, like, multiple people saw him, like, approaching other girls. And his little shtick and how he got Janice was by asking her to help him with his sailboat. Where she gets out to the VW Beetle and she's like, where's the sailboat? He's like, oh, it's up the street at my parents. And the town that he mentioned was like the neighborhood that she lived in. So she's like, oh, okay, yeah, sure. Like, I'll go up there with you. Like, are your parents home? Like, I'll say hi. Like, just being a nice girl, helping out old Casty. And,
right.
And that was it. And no one ever saw her ever again.
I know.
Sad. She was 12:30, and by 4:30, we have witnesses of the next successful abduction. And that's not to say that he wasn't already out there trying to procure the next victim. No, he was already, he was canvassing the concession stand the whole bit. And some people were like, what the hell? What is this bozo doing out here? But God bless her. This one is has like a special place in my heart because, to be honest, looking at this girl's picture, she looks exactly like me. She looks exactly like Molly. Like, she could have been our could have been our sister. Could have been our aunt. Could have been the cousin. So around 4:30, he approaches dear Denise Naslund, and same request, needs the sailboat help. Denise got up from her blanket with her friends, and she was never seen again. Her body was later discovered in a grave somewhere that, that he admitted to later on. But she was never seen alive again. That was That was devastating. Like, she left her dog there. Like, obviously didn't leave it. But everyone was like, wait, where the hell is Denise? Like, they said it wasn't, like, uncommon for some of these victims to, like, you know, go off the beaten path and disappear for a couple days and all that stuff. But they're like, no, she never would have left us. She left her purse. She left her wallet. She left her dog. Like, something was up. So the fact that two girls went missing from the same place and they had all these witnesses, this is when, and now they know they're looking for Ted. This is when people start to take notice, and the police are finally like, all right, we have something to work on here. They didn't know, like, this town's Ted was that town's Ted. That all came to be later.
Right, and like, and that's a good point to mention too, like why, you know, it took so long for him to get caught was also just the time and the lack of communication between states and precincts of, you know, the police and everything like that. Like, who the hell knew that, you know, we had traveling serial killers at this point? Like, it was just, it was brand new territory. Like you said, they didn't know that this Ted was their Ted, so... I mean, people, I think, like, think about in current day, and they're like, how did he get away with it? It's like, well, no, it was just, like, it was so different. And, I mean, it was just, it was poor, all the poor victims. It's really horrible.
And he really showed his ass that day at the lake, introduced himself. Everybody saw the brown VW Beetle. Like, it, the jig was, the jig was up. Like, it, I mean, it took a while for him to get caught, but, like, the jig was up. People were starting to notice things. And speaking of notice things, like... He had, like, girlfriends throughout. Like, he had a girlfriend. Like, we'll dive into that. But, like, really? Okay. So he had a girlfriend. But there was other, like, really bold cases. This one woman he abducted from a ski resort she was staying at with either, like, her husband or her family. She, like, went to, like, go get something from the room. And, again, never seen alive ever again. I think her body was later found. Like... abducted another person at a ski resort, like, almost in plain sight. She was literally just walking to her car to, like, go meet a friend for dinner, and he did the whole crutches bit. So crutches is, here he is. He's on crutches, and his little thing at this time, he asked for help with his skis. I don't know much about skiing, but I feel like crutches is a no. I'm no athlete.
No.
But that sucked for the person he asked, because, like, you don't want to offend and be like, are you sure?
Right? Right?
Yeah, that sucks. Like, this whole thing sucks because, it, like, what's the moral of the story? Don't help people who
look
at you. Like, no.
I know. No, it's devastating. Yeah, of course you're going to want to help the person in need. Who's
literally, really, like, did the Good Samaritan dirty. Like, he turned it sour for everybody.
Mm-mm. And then I think it was, like, maybe around this time, like, shit had really hit the fan. We've got the ski resorts popping. I think it was around this time that his girlfriend, like, started to get super suspicious. Like, she had seen him with, like, some weird shit in the car. The seat's gone, the ropes, the nylons, the whole bit. And
was,
she was...
It was after the lake day.
The lake,
she
yeah, yeah.
Said, yeah.
Yeah.
Her name was Elizabeth.
Elizabeth Liz. Liz.
Yeah, another connection to the tale here, Elizabeth.
My spirit.
Elizabeth Clofer or Clofer, I don't know how to pronounce mm-hmm. it, but yeah, she went to the cops and was like, "My boyfriend's name is Ted.
Right,
he has suspicious shit in his car.
I think he's up
he
to
had
something.
Like ropes and things, and he's always unaccounted for.
Right,
and
disappears. Like even one of them was like her daughter's christening." She had a daughter with a previous relationship, and he missed the christening, and she was like, "Nah, something ain't right here." Like, just weird ass shit.
Yeah,
it was one of those botched sketches, but like, even still, she was like, "That could be my boyfriend." Like, you gotta be pretty sure to identify him based off of one of those sketches, because some of them were really like, yeah,
really bad.
No, it wasn't police work. So there's that. So they did use her for assistance during the case and all that. Yeah, like you had mentioned, there's, you know, some issues with was she dismissed or this or that. But I did read some things where, like, they interviewed her or used her knowledge to gain some information and all that stuff. And sometime after this, when they're figuring out, all right, we've got this Ted, we've got this brown VW situation, we've got this possible girl's boyfriend, and she gave the police his name. So they've got Ted Bundy on the radar here. They don't really know who he is or what the hell he's doing, but they've got this name on the radar. And around this time, he gets pulled over for just like some shit traffic violation. Ew, they found rope, an ice pick, nylons, a crowbar, all this other shit, and they found all that in the car, and this is the saddest. They also found a program for a school play where one of his prior victims, that was her last known location, and that's actually where she was abducted from, the school play. I think, like, her brother was in it, and, like, she went to watch.
Wow, that's
really
disgusting.
Really sad. That was another like spiraling day for him. I think he had tried, that might've been the christening day or something. He tried to abduct someone else, unsuccessful, and then like spiraled, like, I think it was like a crime of opportunity situation. Like, oh, the school play, let me hit this up. And she was like running in and he probably did the crutches shit and never seen again. So sad. So, you know, we got all that. And they also found, like, DNA from other victims. They found hair from the registered nurse that disappeared from the ski resort. They found other DNA from other victims. So they're like, all right, we got some shit here. So they're holding him, and he's waiting for his preliminary hearing. And, of course, narcissist, did the whole bit. We touched on it briefly. We'll dive into it. Did the whole law school bit. So this bitch is acting as his own lawyer. And despite the fact that he's being held for, you know, awaiting hearing for abducting, beating, and allegedly murdering multiple women, the judge said, okay, well, since he's also a lawyer, you can take the shackles off. No, we're not taking shackles off. We're not.
Uh-oh.
But we did, because it was 1970-something. So shackles are off. This is when it gets real. This is when it gets real, real funky. You want to talk about crutches. So they take a recess and Ted is like, quote unquote, studying, prepping in like one of the chambers of this courthouse. And this bitch jumps from a window, and guards who weren't really guarding, because why would they, jumps from a window and literally escapes from the courtroom. And it was, like, a while before they realized, like, it was, he made gains after he jumped. So, imagine that. They open the door and they're like, oh, fuck, Bundy's gone. You know? He gets real crafty here. But also so stupid, like so stupid.
So stupid.
He spent like many days in the woods just like, you know, doing the fugitive shit. Finally, he was captured after 6 days in a fucking stolen car doing another traffic violation. Like, you can't even drive good in a stolen car. No. Like, you're on the run. You know, flying literally under the radar or not? No? No? Okay. So, you know, he did that. He was back in custody. And this time he's, like, in, like, a jail or something. And this is pretty impressive. And this is, I hate to say it, but skinny legend. So, in jail this time, I think you might know where I'm going with this. He, like, would stay back in his cell, like, while other inmates would, like, go to dinner. And he would just skip his meals. And instead, he would spend his time literally carving out a hole in the ceiling. When I tell you the picture of the hole, it's like a 6-inch diameter.
My thigh couldn't fit there.
No. Like,
no.
But in like 6 days or so, like he dropped pounds. Yeah. And he like wedged.
But yeah.
Like, that was one of the most shocking things. Because, like, regardless of, like, fat, you don't have bones? Like, okay. So, yeah. I mean, as crazy as that sounds, like, you think, oh, that plan's never going to work. No, he escapes again. So he does the damn thing. He shimmies through and he's out. You would need to cut me in half and grease me to fit through anything. Anything close. I'm sorry, there was a picture of it. And I was like, wait, is that the real... Or are they being cute? But like
he was built different.
He was built different. I want some stats on his height and weight. There's a lot of unaccounted for anatomy and physiology here. All right, he was 5'10". They don't say. So to clarify, the Ted Bundy diet is skipping jail dinner and carving out a hole in the ceiling, just to be clear. Just don't, right. Not recommended.
He was, I think, 140.
No!
They said that, yeah. They, in this article.
Oh!
No, he's a skinny freak.
He is a salamander. God.
What was the name of that lake? Wasn't it Lake Salamander?
No, Sammamish. All right, so anyways, skinny legend. Nothing else legendary about him, but skinny legend. All right, so back to the drawing board.
But it was after this escape, round two escape, that, like, I think, I mean, every case is devastating, but this one, I think it was his youngest.
There's more before that. Because he left the jail, which was in Colorado. He made his way to Chicago and just did some shit. Then he skipped on down to the Panhandle, and this is where things get real funky. This Tallahassee, he hit it big.
He lost his shit.
Hit it big. So this is when you also get the this is the sorority house murders too. This is when he hits up Florida. Just hear me out. This is probably one of the only times that Florida had their shit together, because like they were on it. And again, at this point in time, they've got his face, his name, and he's wanted. But, you know, we're talking at that point in the 70s from Colorado to Florida. I mean, it's shit's different. But in Florida, this is when he spiraled out and he did the infamous sorority house murders. So he broke into a sorority house, one of the Florida universities. So he broke into a sorority house, again, of course, in the middle of the night, because this is the MO, and he went to town. He just went freaking reckless on it. And he didn't stop there. It was like, that was maybe one night, and then within days, he's on to the next one. And the next one is the one bridge that you were going to dive in on. This is our trigger warning. So this one was effed up. I forget how he ended up there, but just happened to hit up a junior high school And this is where he abducted 12-year-old Kimberly Leach on February 9th of 1978. The story is that she, like, got called to the principal's office, like, her someone was there to pick her up or something, and literally she was never seen again, and her little mummified body was found weeks later. 12 years old.
So horrible.
And I feel like I can't think about a lot of the details of that one, and frankly, I don't really know if I want to go there. But it's worth noting that this is, like, his last crime, and it's also his only known underage victim. And I hate underage. Like, there's no such thing as under. Like, come on. Like, she was a kid. Like, let's not say underage. Like, none of it was cool, but, like, it was a kid. Fortunately, he was arrested within a week of poor Kimberly Leach's murder for, ding, 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 another traffic violation, driving a stolen vehicle. Like, again, it's kind of like...
It's almost like, is it on purpose? Like, right. Is he purposely sabotaging himself?
Or is it just... It's like, you either wonder, like, does he think he's invincible? Or, like, is he just dumb?
Or is he just so, like, manic? Because, I mean, the last few, like the sorority house was a spree.
Oh, he strangled and beat repeatedly multiple women. One woman's jaw was, like, dislocated and, like, borderline hanging. Like, there was a lot there. I forget how many women in the sorority house he ended up killing. Not all of them died, fortunately, right. But they were mutilated. So,
yeah, it's almost like when he's driving, if he's just, like, so not even, like, paying attention, literally, like, to the road, because he's consumed by, like, either thinking about what he just did or, like, getting to his next location. You know what I mean?
They said when they arrested him that time, he was weaving in traffic. Like, why are you weaving? So, and this is where it's like, okay, like, again, are you just dumb? Because at this point in time, he was actively on America's Most Wanted list. Like, top 10. Right. Like, actively. Like, so he wasn't, like, mysterious anymore. The jig was up. Like, he was on the list. So he was, they found him there, arrested him, did the whole bit, and, you know, all of it sort of comes together. And, you know, it's sort of one of those things where, like, he wasn't tried and convicted for each and every crime. And it's like, I mean, first of all, how would you even? You'd be in court for the rest of everyone's life if that was the case.
Right.
But he did have his first trial. This is in Florida. He was only convicted of the crimes in Florida. And his first trial was in 1979 for the sorority house murders. And fortunately, he was convicted and he was sentenced to death via electric chair. So that, I mean, you know, he's already doing the death sentence, the life sentence thing. Uh-huh. And he had a second trial because his second charge was for the murder of the 12-year-old Kimberly Leach, and that was in 1980. So again, he was convicted and sentenced to death. But this whole thing, like, he was on death row for close to 10 years or so. And I mean, when I tell you the man lived, like, he had an entire life on death row. He got married in one of the jail courthouses. Like, they were literally in the middle of, like, court proceedings, and he was, like, brought his wife up. Honestly, don't remember her name. Didn't bother to even look into it. I knew it at one point, but no offense, who cares? Literally got married in a courthouse, and, like, he had, like, dates, like, people, like, women that wanted to date him, like, you know what I mean, like, pen pals. But then this one obviously was, you know, sealed the deal for him. So they got married in jail in 1980. They had a daughter via a conjugal visit in 1985.
Can we talk about that? So many issues with that. You know that this man is on death row.
And he's a sexual predator and a necrophiliac.
Who is like, oh yeah, let him have a conjugal visit?
Right.
Huh?
I just feel like if you rape and then you do the necrophilia bit, the sex is off the table for you.
Yeah, you're not allowed.
Off right? the table.
I'm going to misspeak, and this is just my own personal politics talking, but, like, sex isn't a right. Sex is a privilege, and I just feel like – I just feel like the conjugal shit shouldn't have – no.
No.
So they do the conjugal thing. They have the kid, 81. They get, unsurprisingly, my gosh, divorced in 1986. God bless them. They lasted 5 years. Who the hell knows? I'm sure some sort of irreconcilable conjugal differences.
Also,
like jail could be a deal breaker for some people. Necrophilia and murder might be a deal breaker for some people.
Well, she had a son from a previous relationship. Remember the pictures from the Ted Bundy tapes? It was like her, Bundy, okay, their daughter.
And yeah.
Yeah, and she had like a son who was like older, like 12, 13, and like, they were taking family photos in the jail. I'm like, huh? Like, that poor boy.
Well, remember, in the movie, they depicted it as, like, basically, like, the guards would just, like, let him have, like, they weren't even, like, no offense, like, and this, call me naive, but, like, I used to think a conjugal visit, like, they put you in a closet or something, and, like, y'all got to do y'all thing. But in the movie, it was basically, like, up against a vending machine. Like, really? Oh, like, isn't that... No, yeah, it all seemed very, and again, was like, was that his weird little persuasion shit? Like, you know, me and my wife are gonna, on the vending machine, like, just turn the other way? Like, I don't know. There's a lot to unpack there, and, you know, I just, again. So they get divorced. And then, you know, the rest of his time in jail, I hope he just rotted. But let's cut to the good stuff. So, 1989. January 24th, to be exact. He's put to death and executed via the electric chair. The footage in the Bundy tapes, like, I'm gonna link some pictures in the Instagram story. Like, people were wearing t-shirts like "Burn Bundy, Burn." There were signs that. people were joyous, like, no, like, I've never seen a death celebrated like this. Like, people had posters that literally said "Charge up, old Sparky," aka the electric chair. Like, but imagine nowadays, like, going to jail and just doing the execution day shit. You know, like,
it was literally Coachella.
Florida's different, like, man. Florida's, because that's, I mean, I was born in 90, I'm 30 years old. You're telling me 30 years ago we were tailgating electric chairs? I'd go, but.
I would go.
I mean, I'm not sad to see him go, but, like, just the, yeah. Like, Burn Bundy Burn is, like, shit.
It's so good.
And it was, children are there.
Children in lawn chairs just cheering. Again, no one's sad to see him go, but it's just.
Children in lawn chairs is the funniest thing.
Charge up, old Sparky. Incredible.
Wait, guys, I just looked up his final meal.
Oh, let's talk about it. Let me hear it.
He was a skinny legend to the end. He forewent, for he chose to forego. What's the past tense of that? Forewent? He declined his final meal.
Wow.
Skinny legend.
He didn't have anything?
No, they, like, he chose not to, like, choose anything special, so they gave him the standard meal of steak, eggs, hash browns, and he, like, didn't eat it.
You're not gonna pick something? I don't think he deserves it, but again, like, I'm just, you know, human here. Alright, well, that's...
I respect that.
Like, wow.
I just, like, wonder. I wonder if he really, I mean, he was a sociopath. I wonder if he just truly didn't have an appetite ever. Like, because isn't it true that so...
He didn't eat for joy. Sociopaths... He ate to survive, minimally survive.
Right, exactly.
Wow, that's an interesting...
Because, like, sociopaths don't feel certain things, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I wonder if, like...
kill, you didn't kill to eat, you know?
Exactly.
Right.
You know? No, like a normal healthy brain tells you you're hungry. It's not your stomach even that tells you you're hungry. It's your brain. So, like, no offense. If you also have a brain that's telling you to do things to a corpse, like, far be it from me to say your brain is going to tell you you're hungry. Yeah. I don't know. Like, just, yeah, not me. So, yeah, old Sparky. That is the end of Ted's story. And this feels like a good place to stop for this portion of the episode. And this is where we will leave you until part two, which we will air next week. And we're going to go through the early life of dear Uncle Ted. And we are going to introduce you to how he, fortunately or unfortunately, became a part of our family. So, girls, thanks so much for coming on. We're going to do part two together. Hopefully Ma will be able to hop on for part two. Hopefully she'll be available for that, but it was a pledge, and can't wait to introduce the world to Uncle Ted in the next episode.